The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Top of the hour, trade deadline Tuesday. Paul Spohr from Fangraphs going to come on a little later this hour. We'll talk a little Major League Baseball. But first, it's time to stay on the gridiron. But we'll go from the pros to the college game. Joining us now from College Football News, Pete Vutek. Very excited to talk to this gentleman. Follow him on X at Pete Vutek. Joining us via the Progressive Guest Line. So, Pete, a new season, right? Hope springs eternal in the college football world. And let's start with some win totals, because I was perusing through collegefootballnews.com last night. I stumbled upon your top 10 win total predictions article, and I was like, I want to go right to the top. I want to see what his number one choice is. And I'm not surprised it was Colorado, which tends to be a very popular choice, but it might surprise some of you that Pete believes the under is the way to go for the Buffaloes this year. Not quite buying into year two of Deion Sanders. Please explain yourself, Pete.
I'm a huge Deion Sanders fan. I'm old enough to have been a diehard from way back in the day. I have the jersey in the closet downstairs somewhere to prove it. But I love this whole thing. I hope it works at Colorado, but it's just not happening. I just don't think you can just go transfer portal. I mean, you have to build this up. And my thing about Colorado has been, if you looked at this objectively, it was actually a successful first year. I mean, forgetting the fact that they were last place in the Pac-12, they went from one win to four. That's how you're supposed to jump up in a first year when you have to change absolutely everything. And by any other measure, it'd be okay. We're setting the foundation for the future, but they still didn't fix the lines. They still didn't fix the defense. They could lose to North Dakota State right out of the gate. North Dakota State's still probably the best team in the FCS. They could lose to Nebraska at Nebraska. Colorado State almost got them last year. Baylor's a whole lot better than at UCF, than Kansas State, at Arizona. That's a problem for the first six games of the season. So to do this, you just got to lose seven. There are certainly seven losable games on this thing.
Yeah, Pete, I agree. And I think they're kind of dangling that 5.5. I mentioned this during the break. Like, people are thinking, oh, no way Colorado's not bowl eligible this year. I'm sure they're going to see a ton of money on that over. And it was a big fade. Like, after Colorado started hot last year, some of the sharpest bettors I know were sprinting to the window to fade them, especially in that game against Oregon, just because of all the money and all the attention that they were getting. It turned into just an albatross of a team down the stretch with a lot of good fading opportunities. I don't like fading this team, especially in bowl games. Air Force also on your list as we stay in the state of Colorado. Higher win total than you might expect, considering they lost everyone, but you think they're going to just reload, which is what Air Force does, right?
Every single year. They lose everybody. And it's hard to kind of – you can't look at Air Force and be like, oh, yeah, they're going to be just as good, if not better, this year, because every single year they have to replace like 19 starters every season. And so it is a tough schedule. It is a team that has to completely do over. But again, they have their system of doing this where they just build up the upperclassmen. Then it really is the next guy up. And every single time, and under this regime, they have been fantastic at being able to just win 9 games or more every single season. They just kind of have the style and the system. And so, hey, you know, outside of 2020, I think what has it been since 2016 or something, if they haven't at least gotten to at least 6 wins. So they're going to be able to rock back up and just be there fast. So this is more of like a history kind of play more than just any sort of actually X's and O's sorts of thing.
I'm excited to see Riley Leonard in South Bend, but it is a pretty lofty win total for the Irish this year of Notre Dame. They open at Texas A&M. That is a tough game. And then, of course, you know, their regular cast of character opponents. You got USC in there. They play Florida State, which also is going to be a tough game, depending how the Noles look this year. But 10-2 based off of a win total of 10.5 keeps you to the under, and that's kind of the direction you're leaning here.
Yeah, it's the best way to go. I mean, I whenever you get a 10.5, I always tend to say go under, especially if you get an 11, always go under, because all it takes is one and you're kind of fine. But 10.5, no, go over with the some of the bigger boys. But Notre Dame, like you said, they could lose to Texas A&M to start out. This is a very, very good Irish team. I mean, they are good enough, and the schedule just isn't that bad. But if you look at the, like last year, everyone forgets, you know, they had the really bad day against Louisville from out of the blue. They could lose at USC. And we don't know exactly how this is going to go with the new expanded college football playoff. Notre Dame might not need that USC game. They're certainly going to try and care. But USC might need that game a whole lot more. They could certainly lose to Florida State. They could have a bad day against Georgia Tech. They could have a bad day against, Purdue, but Louisville definitely. But all you need is two. So you're kind of seeing, okay, well, if you lose to Texas A&M to start, you lose one more and there's your under. Or if Riley Leonard's ankle isn't quite right. He's supposedly fine. Everything's all systems go. But if he goes down, there's a huge drop off between the ones and the twos at the Notre Dame quarterback spot.
We're talking college football with Pete Futek, collegefootballnews.com. All right, let's get to some of the big boys and some positive seasons that we expect from Georgia and Ohio State. Let's start with Georgia, who just seems like they are a juggernaut. I think Carson Beck's going to have a big year. I'm not overly excited to bet his Heisman number at the tippy top of the market right now, but I would not be surprised at all if he is on the podium and hoisting that award at the end of the season.
Yeah, same thing for both Georgia and Ohio State. There's Georgia, Ohio State, and there's absolutely everyone else. I mean, these two are just obscenely talented. They were good coming back. If you noticed, both of them didn't have a whole lot of guys taken in the NFL drafts, and they're all going to go in next year, and the transfer portal just kicked in hard for both of them. They're just so much better than everyone else. So like I said before, I do not like going over on a 10.5 ever, but with these two, yeah. I like Ohio State better than Georgia because look at that Georgia schedule. Anybody else is like, this is like a 5-7, schedule for just about anybody else. I mean, Clemson at Kentucky, who's really good this year, at Alabama, Auburn, at Texas, Florida's all right, Tennessee at Ole Miss is killer, and even Georgia Tech's pretty good. I mean, there's five losses there for, easily just the start for any other team, but Georgia's just Georgia. So they might lose once. I don't think they're losing twice.
Yeah, I think Ohio State's in a similar boat. I mean, I do view their roster as light years ahead of the rest of the Big Ten, especially with Michigan being a little bit down this year and kind of overall the watering down of the Big Ten with more teams and more travel situations and more cross-country stuff happening this year. But I don't know if I trust Will Howard, so sell me on Will Howard.
I don't have to. I'll sell you on the rest. I mean, the defense, everybody forgets, like, it got lost that Ohio State had the puck on its stick with a chance to beat Michigan. They were driving for a chance at the win, and that was with Kyle McCord. And so that defense all year long was an absolute killer. Now they get just about everyone back, and they get Caleb Downs, who might be the best player in all of college football. And they've just upgraded. They are so deep defensively. No one's scoring more than 17 points on this bunch. And again, look at this. Compared to everyone, Ohio State fans last year were screaming about Michigan's schedule of what was the non-conference? East Carolina, UNLV, and I can't remember the third of some easy team. But look at that. Akron, Western Michigan, and Marshall. There's your non-conference slate, Ohio State. Each game, they're going to beat those three by a combined 150 points. And then at Michigan State didn't go bowling last year. Iowa, they're good, but that's a home game. At Oregon's the dangerous game, obviously, but that's the one. At Penn State's dangerous, and Michigan's dangerous. Everything else, forget about. They're not going to lose at Northwestern. They're not going to lose to Purdue. So it's really a three-game season, and all you're asking Ohio State to do, who is probably the best team in America, is to win two of those three against Oregon, Penn State, and Michigan.
Yeah, I can tell you, as a Penn State alum, Pete, I am 100% confident that they are coming into Happy Valley and wiping us.
Your fan base might wear white T-shirts. Yeah. That's going to change everything.
Pete, I'm one of those guys. Kelly's laughing over here because he knows the whiteout is not a farce, but it loses its luster after the 20th time that you do it. I was in the building the first time when they beat Ohio State. It was the Troy Smith Ohio State team. Tom Bahaly had the sack in the last moment there of the game. That was the year Penn State went to the Orange Bowl.
That was it.
It's been downhill for the Nittany Lions since. We could talk a little about Penn State. They weren't on your list of win totals.
They're great. They're up there. Yeah. They're great this year. It's as always, but there's always that Ohio State factor. But
exactly.
Expanded college football playoff. Now that the games change in an expanded college football playoff era, go 10-2, and Penn State, you are the 9 in the playoff, and you've got your shot. You're in it to win it. So that's across the board for all these teams last year. Where it used to be, you lose right out of the gate, and you're kind of hosed. Now 10-2 in your Power Four conference. And you're almost certainly going
to
be in.
Oh, Penn State's definitely going to go to the College Football Playoff. They're going to win their first College Football Playoff game at home, and then they're going to lose to one of those Georgia, Ohio State type teams in the second round.
As will everyone else.
As will everyone else. So I guess that's a good way to frame it, because Texas and Oregon kind of are the next two teams up on that list, right, if you look at the odds board in college football. But you are kind of leaning under in both this year. And so neither of those teams has any chance to kind of – or I guess maybe has some chance, but neither of those teams, in your opinion, are good chances to really challenge the Georgias and Ohio States this year.
Well, welcome to the VIP lounge, son. I mean, Oregon could beat Ohio State, you know, but here's the thing about Oregon. Give me their great win. I mean, they had one a couple years ago at Ohio State, and then they kind of gagged away the end of the season. But this is a program that, you know, they had, look at their wins last year. Who'd they beat? Don't say Liberty. I mean, they just did not beat a whole lot of great teams. Now they're going from a Pac-12, which was good, but they missed a bunch of key teams, to now this in the Big Ten, where you do have to play in Ohio State and you have to play a whole lot of better teams. And so same with Texas. Welcome to the SEC, son. I mean, okay, you beat Alabama last year, but they could have and should have lost to TCU last year, Kansas State. All you need is two losses on this. And you look at both schedules and you can find two losses on both.
Yeah, Pete Futek, no losses on your schedule, pal. We appreciate the time.
Always.
College football news, great stuff. I will be reading, as I always do, throughout the course of the regular season.
Have a great day, dear.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I agree that Georgia and Ohio State are light years better. I don't want Ohio State to come into Happy Valley and wipe the floors with us again this year. Please don't make me watch that again.
Was that the legendary Orange Bowl that I attended for Florida State versus Penn State?
Yeah.
What a year. It was like the worst football game ever.
Triple overtime, multiple kicks missed in overtime. But Penn State prevailed by a field goal. More college football on the other side, a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, guess what? The college football betting guide gets released Thursday. I was about to say tomorrow. We're not quite there yet. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams. That is a lot of previews. Top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up for the end of July. Receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our splits, all the way through the Super Bowl at the early bird discount price of just 175 bones. Or sign up for a monthly subscription. You get your first 30 days for only $19. See everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. Sign up today.
Jared, quick shout out to the crew. We got Sean McComb running audio today, one of the VSiN greats. Man, Sean, how long have you been working here? 5-6 years?
One of the
like
VSiN greats.
He's been around a long time.
We got
Larry Meir on graphics and then the great Matt Hicks directing, which always knows how to scare me when we're coming back from a break and goes and yells, "Oh God, what am I doing?" And then everything rolls fine, of course. Behind the scenes of TV production, this is how it works.
I in my headset, I usually only get the essentials set to me.
You get the essentials.
You know, Kelly is like my filter, but you know he makes sure that I only hear what I need to hear. I did not hear that. It would have startled me.
So I got
thank
a little startled.
Yeah. Thank you for holding me back from that. Props to everyone in the back.
Do great work every day, bright and early.
I think the biggest misconception of what happens on TV is that the only thing that's happening is what you're seeing.
Right. Yes.
I always tell people that the part that you see on the air is about 10% of what I do.
Yep.
And it's usually about maybe it's about 1% of like the whole package of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it really is honestly the
easier part. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that is a lot more work than what Jared and I are doing over the course of these 2 hours.
I'm just showing up and talking. I don't even do any work. I just show up and just they tell me what camera to look at. No, I'm just kidding. I obviously do some work. But I always say that the job of the host or the analyst is during the show. And then obviously the production is before the show. Like, in order for this to look and be seamless, there's hours of work that go on before the show even airs. So what you watch again is kind of like you don't want to be in the imagine being in the kitchen when they're cooking your meal at a restaurant. You're not in the kitchen. You're just waiting for the meal to be delivered to you. And that is what is happening now. All right, let's rehash a little bit about what Pete was talking about, because I think the part that I would push back on the Ohio State bit a little bit, like, and I guess we'll start at the top, which is the two top teams, Georgia and Ohio State. The pushback I have on Ohio State is a lot of it does revolve around the quarterback. And as good as Ohio State's roster is, the most important position, I'm sorry, I am distracted right now by what is happening on that screen with the horses doing their trots.
I think this is dressage. This is dressage. It's basically like horse dancing.
I am basically, this is like, the horse is doing like, I want to say it's like a version of like, what dance would that be in real life?
I don't know, man. I think this is dressage. Yes, and they basically just, they get the horse to do little moves.
This is awesome.
This is my dressage impression.
That is awesome. The horse is doing like a, it's almost like what I do in like the morning for my stretching routines, like just doing a little bit of boogie here.
Like the old, school 90s row machine?
Incredibly distracting.
That was always a fun video game at the gym.
And then we've got water polo here on the side, which is a very interesting. So I've actually been on water polo before. Collegiate water polo, not Olympic water polo.
That feels always feels to me like one of the most like athletically demanding sports
Doug
you
Kazarian,
could possibly
right?
play.
Doug Kazarian, former water polo player Brown, right?
Really? I didn't know that.
I think I might be. Doug, if you're watching, you're probably not. But if you are, correct me on that.
Good
I
on
thought,
him.
I thought you were an athlete in the Ivy League. I could be wrong on that.
Handball looks awesome because I can put myself in the mindset, Jared, of running up and down a court and just trying to throw a ball at a net.
It looks
right?
like I could go play handball right now.
When you got to swim the whole time and
Forget
try
it.
To, like, make passes and shoot and
Forget
everything,
it.
Like, that is
well,
incredibly
think about
difficult.
How, think about, and I didn't mean to get totally derailed from college football, but the look at this horse jumping around on the side over here. Awesome. This is one of my new favorite equestrian events. The horse.
I keep missing the moments.
The horse pomping.
Yeah.
It looks like a unicorn. It honestly does. It's just majestic. This is awesome. You can probably bet on this.
Oh, yeah, you can.
You can bet on the horse doing his little routine here. I wish we could air it.
I'm glad Drew brought up the cross-country thing.
This is incredible.
That course looked awesome. I think there are a couple. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, but there are a couple of these events. Like the fencing is like in some like castle. It looks amazing.
Yeah, that does. It is pretty cool. I need to. So I'm gonna carve out some time this week and really watch this. But back to Ohio State, which was the topic at hand.
Right.
I really do think the quarterback situation matters more than the roster. And I'm not saying Ohio State's not gonna win 11 games this year and go over their win total, but you saw. You know what happens. You saw with Penn State last year. Penn State's actually a great example of this. The rest of the roster was elite. The quarterback wasn't ready. The quarterback wasn't ready to compete. Now, Will Howard's had a really illustrious career at Kansas State. He's had a really good run against Big 12 defenses and teams that I would say are below the caliber of talent he's going to see this year. I question the step up in class. If you were going to ask me, and I think we have the odds, if you want to go to the odds of the College Football Playoff,
by the way,
they're pretty similar to Georgia and Ohio State. I 100% would rather bet Georgia than Ohio. Like, I'm not betting either right now because I don't like parking my money at the top of the market for 6 months. But if I had to pick right now, I think one's 3-1, the other one's 2-1. Like, it's not a big difference there, but there's a massive difference at quarterback. One of them's new with a brand new wide receiver group, 3-1, 4-1. That's the difference in Georgia and Ohio State. One of them's brand new.
But Ohio State's odds are shorter to make the playoff. It's like minus.
That makes sense because of the conference they play in.
It is.
But
minus.
I'm not betting Ohio State right now with all the unknowns on Will Howard. No chance.
Valley slight. Minus 650 versus minus 600.
Oh, now they've got ping pong on over here, and this is just.
This
ping pong is mesmerizing for Olympics.
I will admit.
Look how small this table is, Kelly.
No, it's crazy, man. It's awesome. I don't want to turn back my head to the camera again. But whether it's smart or not, I'm enjoying. I do think there's something to like these parlays of wrapping up these teams and to like make the playoffs. So like there has been some of these Olympics bets that like I've made, and maybe I just included one of Drew's. And I just parlayed it with Georgia to make the playoffs. Because I am with you. Like, to me,
it's a good strategy.
The quarterback's enough of a separator that it pushes me over the edge with Georgia versus Ohio State, if that's where we're going. And at least, like, when you're confident in the quarterback play returning, like, and then you always know Georgia's going to have the rest of the pieces there. Like, that is...
Yeah, they didn't lose much. Bowers, I mean...
I just think there's bets
the
along the way
behind
I'm going to be
Bowers is
in.
Better than Bowers from what I heard. What's his name? Oscar something? The tight end that they played a little bit last year.
Oh, Brock Bowers. Yeah,
yeah, so, like, whoever they lose, it's like they get a... It's like they sprout up another beanstalk. It's like Groot. Like, when he died in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, he just grew right back. Like, it just... they'll just bring in another guy. Oscar something... the tight end on Georgia.
I already skipped. Sorry, I was going to look up the Ohio State depth chart because the I want you to keep talking about the quarterback thing because maybe the only college football bet I've made so far is on is in the Heisman race and it's on a backup for Ohio State.
Really? Who?
The Julian Sayid kid.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oscar Delp, that's who I'm thinking of, the tight end on Georgia, who is supposedly better than Bowers, who is like one of the best players that I've ever seen. I haven't gotten there with any college football bets, except I made two bets in the guide. Do you want me to give you one now, one tomorrow? What do you think? Or do you want to save one for Thursday?
How about one right now and then one for Thursday?
All right, we'll give you one now. I'll give
you get
you one
nothing
Thursday.
Tomorrow.
Get nothing tomorrow. Tomorrow we won't do college football. All right, hold on. I have to go to my screen here.
Yeah, save all your college football for Thursday.
Yeah, I've got to go to the screen. Okay, here you go. College football prep. Okay, I'll give you a choice. Do you want my playoff bet or do you want my win total bet?
I want your playoff bet. That's
playoff
more
bet.
Fun.
Alabama's plus money to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me.
Okay. All right. So for a guy
They're plus who, money to make a 12-team field.
For a guy who lightly bets college football and doesn't do much with it, that I feel like that's the thing that's been jumping out to me every time that I look at it, like anything with college football. I'm like, I can still get plus money in this big of a field for Alabama to make
it? I would consider plus money at this price in a 4-team field for Alabama. No, probably not. But – it's a 12-team field. So what you're saying is...
I also just don't... like, how much is this about the team, Jared? How much is this about Nick Saban?
I think it's about Nick Saban at all because Kalen DeBoer, I think, is just as heralded at this point. He's obviously not Nick Saban, but Kalen DeBoer took Washington to the championship game.
All right, so you don't think... I'm legit asking. I don't know this one way or the other. Like, you don't think they're partially being priced in the market because of Nick Saban's absence?
Yes, but if they are downgrading Alabama because of Nick Saban, that's a mistake. I would argue that DeBoer is a better coach at this stage.
Okay.
X's and O's wise. The only thing you're downgrading is the transition.
Right.
But he brought over an incredible amount of talent with him. The recruits pretty much stayed. He gets back Jalen Milroe. The offensive line's still intact. We know the defense is going to be good.
Now, the fact that Milroe's
I just don't see how they're plus money to make the playoff. It's a 12-team field. There's a lot of meat on the bone. Paul Spohr, baseball trade deadline on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Trade deadline Tuesday. It is an exciting day if you're a fan of any team in the Major League Baseball world. Your team could add or subtract a significant player in the next few hours. So let's get up to date on what's happening. For that, we bring in our pal, Paul Spohr. Does great work for Fangraphs. Follow him on X at Spohr. And Paul, let's just not bury the lead here. Who do you think is going to be the biggest name dealt in the next few hours before the deadline?
Well, for those unaware, I am a Tigers fan, and it's got to be Jack Flaherty. I'm going to be really, really upset with my favorite team if they don't move Flaherty, right? Like, they're kind of fringe competing, so I'm not saying they got to trade Skubal, although if the Orioles do come with, like, a Basalo, Kerstead, Kowser, Holiday, pick two out of those four, then I'm totally for it. But Jack Flaherty was a one-year signing, and this is literally the perfect outcome right now. Actually, the more perfect outcome would have been if they had a good first month and they were, like, truly competing. Like, the Tigers could have been the Royals this year if things had broken right earlier at hitting. And maybe that would be the best outcome would be Jack Flaherty would be leading them to the playoffs. This is definitely the second best outcome. They are in fringe contention and he is a full on ace again. And this market is hot. If the Tigers do not trade Jack Flaherty, I think, you know, it gets close to malpractice there by Scott Harris and company.
Yeah, I thought when they banged him from yesterday's start, that was kind of the indicator that he might get moved. We did see that situation happen with the Astros yesterday where Jake Bloss got moved, and it was like immediate. We got the news of where and when and how. Having to wait a little bit longer here for the Jack Flaherty news, but I do expect that to take place at some point today. based on the moves that have already taken place, what do you think is the most impactful? You can name a couple. And is there a situation that you think really got better based off of the moves that were made over the last few days?
I certainly like the Kikuchi pickup for Houston. They definitely needed some pitching. You know, they've been kind of the sleeping giant this year. We kind of wrote them off. I say we as like the baseball community, because they were at certain points where their record historically, like whatever it was, their 370 win percentage. If you have a 370 or worse win percentage X number of games into the season, you don't make the playoffs. It was that kind of venture for Houston. So they've clawed and fought their way back in. They're maybe going to get some guys healthy, but they needed some pitching depth. So Kikuchi was a nice pickup for them. I know that's one of the more recent moves, but I did really like that. The Rays, you know, there is a general pushback, like every deadline that they pop off like this, of, well, why do we always fawn all over the Rays? And I don't know, from my standpoint, it's because they keep not missing. They keep doing things the right way. That team, the Rays, are not that much worse today than they were before all these trades in terms of their chances the rest of this year, and they're markedly better for years to come. They work on a shoestring budget, which is self-imposed, of course. Every team is truly rich, but the owners decide how much they want to give, and yet they do it the right way. I think the Rays have done well, even as a non-contender. I like what the Cardinals did with that big Fetty move. Fetty Fam is like total Cardinals. Obviously, Fam's been there, but Fetty is such a Cardinals pitcher. And what I mean by that is just like a quality kind of mid-tier guy that they will get the most out of. Like he'll probably keep pitching like a number two for them. And then, of course, the big shooter drop, in addition to Flaherty, would be Crochet, and that could flip somebody's trade deadline too. If a certain contending team gets Crochet, they could jump to the top of the list here. But I don't think any one team has been over the top way better, but a lot of the best teams have made sharp moves. I even like what Philly's done. They've made moves on the edges, right? They don't have to go out and get any sort of foundational pieces, but even their small moves, getting Estevez, who looks great, the Austin Hayes for Sir Anthony Dominguez. I love the first place trade. So I like what Philly's done too, for sure.
Yeah, I really like the Estevez. I mean, he might be one of the better closers in baseball this year, moving spots and just being what I think is going to be a really good bullpen addition for yep. Philly, who really needed the bullpen help. Attacking today, this is, I would say, maybe the most unique, outside of maybe the last day of the season, the most unique day to bet baseball. You could be betting on a team, and this happened yesterday. If you bet a Nerfy, which is, you know, action no matter who starts, you bet that Nerfy in Houston, you bet that Nerfy in Detroit yesterday, you kind of got bamboozled there with them pulling those starters late. Very unique day to bet or to be in the fantasy world. What would be your overall advice to bettors today as they're trying to navigate this?
Be careful. I really wouldn't get too involved with it, but I know we as handicappers and gamblers, we want to get in there and try to outsmart the market, maybe anticipate some of these moves, which I get, but be smart with it. I think there's even a case to maybe lower your unit rate on a day like today, just to protect yourself a little bit. If you want to get in on it and you want to, like, you know, try to go for some of these moves, because right now I don't think there's a ton of pitchers who could get moved on today's slate. Never say never, but I think you're pretty good for most of the slate, but the lineups could change, right? You could lose a key piece there or a key bullpen piece. So things could still happen. So I would just be very cautious with it. Whatever my normal volume was on a standard Tuesday, I'm probably making that 75% worth just to protect myself.
That being said, anything on your board today that we should be keeping an eye on?
Honestly, I haven't really analyzed it because of the potential trades. Same with fantasy. You know, DFS, I am a little bit more set in what I want to do. Again, I don't think Hunter Brown is going to have anything change. I like him against the Pirates. Robbie Ray, his second start, he goes from facing the Dodgers to Oakland, and he was excellent against the Dodgers if he looks like he did. So I like those two as a rotation there at DraftKings. And then as far as hitters, I like stacking Houston against Bailey Falter because they hit lefties pretty well. I think you can get some Milwaukee Brewers against Bryce Elder because he has certainly not recaptured last year's magic. And anytime Patrick Corbin. Now, in fairness, Patrick Corbin has been better of late.
Yeah.
But I will never fault anybody for stacking against him still. I'm sorry. Like, even with his recent run, he's only lowered the ERA down to 5.26. So credit where it's due, but I don't think you have to, like, stop chasing Patrick Corbin with your hitters. And so you can definitely get some hitters in against him today for sure.
I'm more first inning focused with a lot of my wagering most days. I mean, he's 21 starts. It's just 17-4 to the Nerf. I mean, he's had a pretty decent run, at least in the first inning this year. It has tailed off a little bit later.
Yeah, maybe it's a situation where Patrick Corbin tires out then. If he's that strong early on and starts to look good, but then ends up giving up those runs, I'm kind of curious what his second and third time through might look like there.
Yeah, I think that's a great – and I'm noticing that a lot, and this is actually a really good macro question for you, Paul. Now that we are seeing these starting pitchers basically turn into five-inning or bust, like it just it seems like that's the goal every day. Anything north of five innings is like bonus, and you need to be an elite pitcher these days to even, you know, have an outs number that's 18 and a half, which means you're pitching past the sixth inning into the seventh inning, which is just very rare. Even for a guy like Logan Gilbert, even for a guy like Paul Skeens last night, you were getting significant plus money to go over 18 and a half outs, which means you're pitching into the seventh inning. It's just a very rare thing. I do think that makes the first inning, the first time through, those numbers that much more important, as these guys just get condensed to basically two times through the lineup and then you're out.
I totally agree. And it is a situation where, because it is so tight, one tough inning, and it doesn't even have to be a tough inning in terms of damage. It just has to be in terms of pitch count, right? You can get out of the jam, but if you push 25 plus pitches, 30 is kind of that red zone. So if you start getting 25 plus for one inning, that can totally screw you for getting through six plus at that point. So it is a real tenuous situation there. And like you said, maybe what, 10, 12 pitchers are even going to get a six inning type of line where it looks like you even have to kind of be nervous about it. But guys just don't go deeper anymore. That's not how they're trained. They're trained to empty the tank. They could if the training changed, right? This isn't a situation where pitchers are weaker and their predecessors were much stronger. It's that they're told, just give us what you got. If it happens to be four and a third versus six and a third, we will figure it out with the bullpen. But we're not worried. We want you to give your best from the jump there. And that's why you see some of these guys come out so strong in the first three innings, but then die out in the fourth or fifth because they've been emptying the tank that first time through.
Yeah, I've noticed it. And I'm not saying that's the only reason why the Nerfy has been profitable and successful this year, but I think it's one of the contributing factors is that these pitchers are gearing up earlier in games to give you their best stuff, because they know once they get past the second time through the lineup, they're toasted anyway. So they I'm seeing guys like, again, Skeens is kind of the exception to the rule, but these guys come in, throw 100 in the first inning. Like, it used to be the opposite, where they would start slow and build for the end, but now it seems like they're kind of just falling off a cliff in, like, the fourth
or fifth
inning.
Because you might not get there.
Exactly.
Like you're saying, what are you saving it in the tank
exactly.
for? Only your true aces. And I being a Tigers fan, Justin Verlander was the best at the gaining. That he's bringing his 98 to 100 in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning on those days that he was getting there, which was a lot more frequent even just 10, 12 years ago. But it's a different game now, and I understand not everyone loves it. I like starting pitching, so I want to see guys go longer. I love the true aces, but it does have a trickle effect, and I agree. I think teams are ready to go. Pitchers are ready to go from the jump more. First inning scoring is still, you know, generally where you're going to see the most scoring, but pitchers come out a lot more geared up now than they ever have.
Yeah, the thing that I noticed this year, and the data backs this up, less overall scoring, more home runs than average in the first inning.
Makes sense.
That is what we're seeing ruin the Nerfy more often than not, is guys just piping them down the middle, and they're getting hit to Mars. Paul Spohr, always hitting one out of the park. We appreciate the time, pal. Good luck on deadline day.
Thanks, y'all. Take care.
All right, we will wrap up a numbers game on the other side. I think we've got some baseball to get to, but what do you think, Kelly? Need a little football, too? What do you want to talk about
next
segment?
Maybe a little bit of both.
You'll have to come back and find out. Stay with us.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, go to VSiN.com right now. We've got Olympic previews for dressage. Just kidding. I wish
get
that
on
we
it,
did.
Zach Cohen. Come on.
Yeah, Zach Cohen. I'm really disappointed that Zachary Cohen's Olympic preview today did not include Versailles dressage, or I guess dressage at Versailles, which is now it has vaulted up to the number one sport in Jared Smith's Olympic power rating.
I'm disappointed in you a little bit, man. Like, me and you have followed similar career paths.
It's true.
And, like, we both have local news backgrounds. Like,
also true.
You haven't done local sports if you haven't covered dressage in South Florida. Come on, man.
So I never worked in South Florida
That's
in
right,
local
you didn't.
News.
Yeah.
My so Actually, this is a perfect lead-in. I covered Olympic sports in Michigan. Can you guess which sport it was?
I'm going to go with hockey or something on ice.
Curling. There is video of me on YouTube curling, and then I busted it hard on the ice, and I put that in the package that I did on it, and I still use that as like an outtake for the end of some of my reel. Actually, I don't because I haven't done a reel in years. But when I used to, you know, apply for jobs on the reg.
People come after Jared now. That's how it works.
No, I just have too many jobs I don't need anymore. I'm trying to tell people to stop calling me.
All right. I think I have VEASAN trivia for you.
All right, what do you got?
I might be making up the accomplishment here, but who here at VEASAN was a state champion in curling?
Greg Peterson has to be.
No, that is incorrect. That is incorrect. The correct answer. Have you given up already?
Yes.
You want to think of more?
Well, I think there's better. Our time's better spent.
The correct answer is Benjamin Wilson.
I love you, Ben.
I don't know if he actually won a state championship, but I know he curled.
Here's what I'm going to do later. Because I love all of you so much, I am going to dig deep into the Jared archives.
Yes.
And I'm going to find the clip of me curling.
Need that for tomorrow, please.
Although it's not relevant because we're not in the Winter Olympics. But I have competed in an Olympic sport, curling. I guess I've competed in other Olympic sports because I've played basketball in my life, but that's not as exciting as curling. Curling's hard. I know it looks like bowling on ice. These people get really low, and they're, like, gliding. I remember the curling
expert. It's hardcore shuffleboard. Shuffleboard's not even easy.
But it's like Spider-Man shuffleboard because you're, like, on the ice, like, in this, like, weird, like position.
Superhero
position.
And
you're like trying to like glide and then I was also one of the sweepers with the brooms. That is like a tough work. You are like basically like gliding down like 50 yards of ice while you're like trying to sweep.
Yeah, that feels like a holder in the NFL. Like that's a thankless job. You're only going to get mentioned if you screw that
and
up.
And I'll be honest, you get buff. Because you're freaking sweeping away. Curling is no joke. And all the Olympic sports, again, I am fascinated by the dressage that is happening right now at Versailles. But long story short, Zachary Cohen has Olympic basketball picks on the site. Go check it out.
Whoops.
all right, let's wrap up with some baseball. Great stuff from Paul Spohr. Always a captivating listen because he kind of goes at it from both perspectives, right? The DFS perspective and the straight gambling, straight analysis perspective. Those are two different worlds that kind of blend together sometimes. But today is a very difficult day to bet baseball. You could literally be betting on a lineup that gets completely blown up before the game starts, and your bet's locked in. So be careful. Here's what I would do. If you didn't bet something last night, I did. It was a Nerfy in Tampa, Miami. I wouldn't bet it now. It's like moved 40 cents overnight. But I wouldn't bet anything until, like, literally 30 minutes before game time. And I know usually that's a taboo because you're not getting the best of the number. Mm-hmm. But in this case, on this day, I think it makes sense to wait. Literally watch the pregame show and make sure your guy's on the field. Because the worst possible feeling is when you make a bet on a game and the starting pitcher gets traded before the game. It happened yesterday twice. Two different games. Now, Jack Flaherty hasn't been traded yet, according to Paul, and I agree. He will get traded, I think, at some point today. Jake Ploss got traded, like, right before the game. And if you bet that Houston Nerfy with Skeens yesterday, you still won your bet, but I would have been shaking in my boots if the starter got replaced an hour before the game. So be very careful today when you're betting Major League Baseball. The trade deadline, I believe it's noon Eastern. I could be wrong on the time. I have no idea when the time
is. I believe I saw 6 Eastern.
So 3 Pacific. Yeah. So you've got some time. I would not make any more bets in baseball until 3 o'clock Eastern. Or 3 o'clock Pacific.
Yours sounds way more right than mine.
I don't know the exact time. It's sometime between the time that you have and the one that I gave. It's
6 p.m. Eastern.
So you're right. You're right. 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. Which means you have... Let me do my math here. 3 and 3. You have 6 hours until the trade deadline. I personally would not make a bet for the next 6 hours.
I think the other way you could approach this today is, you know, like I'd say even screw the 30 minutes before. It's the what do we bring this up often with basketball, where like it's never worth buying points in basketball, but you might get the start of a game to just go, go the other team's direction a little bit, and it moves 1 point or a half point on the live line, and you get in. I'm not even talking about trying to catch extra value, but just wait till you could wait till the top of the first inning. Wait till the first pitch has actually been thrown, and to get involved live when you actually know where the lineups are going to be.
Great advice. And also, there's a million we're going to play again tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
That's always the thing with baseball. I used to get a lot of FOMO with baseball because we are drilled as these sharp handicappers to just get the best of the number. And so when I see people that I trust putting out props, usually my strategy with baseball is I'm the first inning guy. I focus on first inning numbers. I feel like I'm, pretty on top of it most days. The other stuff, the other markets, props mainly, I don't bet really sides and totals in baseball. I've got like 3 or 4 people that are on a list, and they tweet out picks. And usually when they tweet out a pick, the number moves. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's 2 people that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, prop bet guy being one of them. He tweets out a number, and that thing's moving. It's moving 30 or 40 cents in the first 5 minutes.
It moved 75 cents in about 30 minutes on the show today? It was Great Britain in their whatever relay race today.
I guess I missed that move. Yeah. See, that's the problem when you're doing these live shows is I miss out on a lot of great bets because people come on and talk about it, and by the time I get to commercial break, the numbers already moved because they've already talked about it.
Well, I think they're racing very soon or have raced already. I don't know. The guys in the back probably know the answer.
Probably. Right? So my point being, I used to just be very much like once I see the bet, I got to go sprint to make it. I'm a little more patient, I think, at this stage of my baseball career. Because there's so many games on so many days. Like, if I miss this bet, I miss this number, there'll be another one tomorrow. So I'm not in this, big rush. Now, baseball is about rhythm and timing, just like the players. The bettors get into a rhythm and a timing with the daily grind. So it makes sense to kind of stay in your rhythm. This is one of those days that will throw you out of that rhythm, and I think it's perfectly acceptable to punt on the entire day or, as Kelly mentioned, just wait till the game starts.
The rhythm stuff's interesting. I always find that fascinating because you do a lot of Major League Baseball. I do a lot of NBA. They're both very long seasons.
Yep.
You're not always there's not always going to be something every day that you want to bet, A, and then B, when you try to take time off either for vacation or you just need a mental break.
Vacation? What's that?
Exactly. Maybe you're running bad. You just need to take a little time off. There's something between, I think you need to unplug, but there's also, I'll be honest, but during the NBA season, if I unplug for a week, I know that means it's probably one more week away before I'm making a single bet because enough happens in the NBA regular season in a week that you got to get back to, reevaluating all your teams and numbers and everything.
The way that I usually describe it to people, if you feel, and I felt this way before, bad luck, bad break, ball hits a rock, goes into left field, you lose a Nerfie. You didn't cap that. There's no fault there. There's nothing to, gain from that knowledge-wise. You just got unlucky. When that starts to happen a lot and you feel like you want to take a step back, my first instinct, if you are angry and really upset, you're probably betting too much.
Yeah.
Not too many games, too much money per bet. If one unlucky break, or even a week in baseball, which is really less than 1% of the season at this point, it's a little more than that, but you just have to move on. I think the best advice I have for baseball is to bet a low enough amount and to be consistent enough with your process to feel like you can repeat it every day without a massive break. Because if you take a week off, it's harder sometimes to get up to speed and you're behind.
Yeah.
So I think
that's where it is tricky. That part's tricky.
Yeah. I think you've got to stay consistent with baseball to where you've got to do it every day. Today's one of those days, though, that's unique because of the roster manipulation that's going on. We didn't get to some of the stuff we wanted to talk about today. I want to talk about some exactas in the baseball market. Maybe tomorrow will be a good day to talk about that, though, because maybe some of the numbers might move overnight if some of these big starters get moved, a Crochet or a Scooble. It could be a really interesting night in the baseball futures market. Appreciate Kelly, everyone in the back, all of our guests. The numbers game has been awesome here on this Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow on VSiN.